South Carolina's got everything. Natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch, Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's fall25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks. John Shannon here. Landon Ferraro will be along in a moment, along with Tyson Berry, his broadcast cohort, teammates as you were. They are now on the Sportsnet broadcast, and we will be sitting here to discuss what happened in Game 1 of the 2025-2026 regular season, a victory against the Calgary Flames. Some pretty positive stories to go when you think about Thatcher Demko's play, Philip Hedl's play, Braden Coote's play, and a penalty kill that was pretty impressive. Some good storylines when you consider Game 1 of the regular season. And with that, we'll take a break. Landon, Tyson, and John on this edition of 100% Canucks.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks. Landon, John, and joined by Tyson Berry, the latest television star in British Columbia. So there he is. You signing autographs on the concourse?
It's crazy. I can't go anywhere anymore.
Yeah, and you thought you were famous as a hockey player, and you're going to be more recognized in the next year or two as being on television than you ever did when you played the game.
Yeah, I believe you, but certainly never thought I was famous. There's a handful of people who knew who I was.
Well, I don't know. You're pretty big in Victoria, let's be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
All right, so let's talk about, with both of you, Landon, you first. Game 1 of 82, a pretty impressive victory by the Vancouver Canucks against the Calgary Flames. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good game overall, especially, you know, considering it's the home opener. There's so much that goes into it. You know, it looked at the beginning of the game, it looked like Calgary had already played a game and Vancouver was trying to get themselves into, you know, to that level of intensity. And they're passing up, shots early and trying to figure out how they're going to get themselves into it. Like, until that Sherwood goal, it was kind of a toss-up, and that's when it really changed. And, you know, Tyson made a comment last night on the panel of, you know, like, you just need to make the simple play sometimes. Like, you just need to just fire that shot, and it really got the guys going for the rest of the night.
Opening night's tough, Tyson?
Yeah, there's like Landon said, there's a lot that goes into it. So you've got your opening night, but you're showing up early September, you're getting into camp, you're rolling, and then you start trimming the roster down. You get to your team, and then, it's almost like a normal game. You do probably 20 minutes of video preparing for the other team. And then that home opener, it feels like you're going to do a week of video just trying to get your system. So it can drag a little bit leading up to it. And then it sure is nice to get that one over with and then just settle into the rhythm of the season. But, last night I thought it was a good game by both teams through two. They've not a ton of mistakes, good physicality, I think. If you bought tickets to the Canucks game, you kind of got everything you looked for. And that third period was a lot of fun, I think, and explosive, some nice goals. And I think the game had a bit of everything.
So let me ask you this, Tyson. Do you, not that you watched, I mean, you were in Calgary most of last year and not you watched the Canucks very often, but do you see a different system with Adam Foote than with Rick Tocchet?
I think like you said, I was watching a lot of the Flames games. I didn't get to, other than when we played the Canucks, I didn't get to see a ton of it. So you guys would know better than me on that one.
Tyson or Landon?
Quite a bit different, right? Like, I think that there wasn't as much of making sure you're in the right position and trying to be kind of perfect within that system, and especially the defensive zone. They got moving a lot more. They have a really mobile team and they can get around the ice pretty good. So, they started to swarm in the D zone, which for a lot of the night, like, they killed a lot of Calgary's chances pretty early. They only got caught, probably three or four times in a real extended defensive zone. And so, like, once they got into that, they'd get out into the neutral zone. They'd get through there a lot quicker. You saw D jumping up quite a bit more. The neutral zone, when they're, Calgary's carrying the puck up, they were a lot more, Vancouver's a lot more aggressive at attacking the player with the puck, not just trying to force that dump. They're trying to cause turnovers quite quickly. And, I think with the group that they have right now, that can skate the way that they do, it is better for them to play this type of style. It keeps everyone engaged a lot more throughout the game and keeps you on your toes because you don't know when your buddy might strip a puck and then all of a sudden you're going back the other way. And there's a couple real good opportunities off the rush, Hedl's breakaway goal, Besser's the fifth goal was, that was in the D zone, goes D to D, hits Pettersson just outside their blue line. Like, that was from Canucks goal line to Besser putting into the net within 4 or 5 seconds.
Well, so, I mean, I'm not, I see what you're talking about. The other thing that fascinated me, guys, is the balance of the four lines. I don't think there was a forward that played 20 minutes last night. And really, the only two guys that were above 20 were Roenick and Quinn Hughes, which is to be expected. But when you're rolling four lines like that, Tyson, what does that do for your team mentality?
Well, it's awesome. I think one of the problems they ran into in Edmonton was the top two lines played so much, and then the bottom two lines never really felt like they were a part of it. So if you can get that bottom six feeling like they have that big role and they have a purpose on the team, I'm a big believer that can, that really just brings everyone together, and then everyone's got that feeling of, I'm important to this team. And, that mentality goes a long way. And when you're trying to do something special, like, make the playoffs or win a cup. So, it's early, it's one game. Things tend to, shuffle themselves out. But I mean, if they can find a way to run, four solid lines throughout the year and kind of pull minutes back and make everyone feel a part of it, I think that's definitely at the benefit of the Canucks.
You guys talked about it on the broadcast on Thursday night. Landon, what do you make of Baines and his penalty killing?
I really liked it. I mean, the two blocks and then instantly breaking up that 2-on-1 where he ends up as the net front D, essentially. Those were amazing, and those are big, big plays. But even if you take those away, the way that he can use his speed, his intelligence on the ice, he gets up in the forecheck, he can get himself back. Like, he had a really good night that way, but when you look at it, like, you need to find a way to get your ice time as a young guy. And a lot of the time, you know, unless you're that superstar young guy that jumps right onto a power play, the easiest way to do that is on the penalty kill. And Baines got better and better through last year on the kill in Abbotsford. He was extremely good through the playoffs, especially as it went along into the finals. Again, like, he's a smart guy that can move. And you saw last night, he's not afraid to put his body on the line. You know, just like Tyson said on the broadcast, like, that's just what you got to do. When guys that are built like Tyson, like, you get in front of those shots as much as you can.
Oh, hold on. I got to go check the notes about Tyson Berry blocking shots.
Yeah, that's not, there couldn't have been too many of them, but man, do they sure hurt when they hit you. I think we've all probably played with, you know, a teammate that goes out and does something like Baines did last night. And that's a great, I mean, it sucks. Doing that stuff sucks. It's a hard job. And to throw yourself in front of the big one, the first one, and then, you know, 10 seconds later, you're getting the exact same thing coming at you and you're doing it again. That wins over a lot of people, your teammates, your coaches. I think the fans will be, you know, endeared by that. So obviously you want to bring a lot of stuff to the table and try to carve out a nice career and be a two-way player. But to have the ability to be able to do that is it's a great foundation and a good base. And we'll keep you in the lineup a lot of nights.
Okay, so Tyson, I'm going to ask you about something you should know about. The penalty kill went 4 for 4, great. But so did the power play went 0 for 4.
Yeah.
Was there much there? Is this just a chemistry thing with new bodies? What do you make of what the power play did?
I think they'll be fine. You know, the power play, the best ones I've been on, you don't need to go 25% every night. You know, you go 0 for 4 and then you go 2 for 4 the next night. But I think there's tons of talent there. There's lots of potential to have a great power play. But for me, the best ones I always played on, it was simple. You know, we had the best players in the world in Edmonton, but they still played simple. It was predictable. We had plays that we knew would work against certain types of kills. And it was fast. It was up, over, nothing, back up, shot, rebound, get it back, curl. We just, you know, I think that the power play can really run into the problems when you try to overcomplicate it. And, you know, just being little baby sauce, a little too fancy, and then it's down 200 feet, it kills your momentum. So I think if they simplify, stick to the fundamentals, shoot the puck, there's enough skill where it just takes over.
It is a classic case of A, chemistry, and B, overthinking, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. That little play that you try to make, that's maybe, you know, it's a 20% play instead of a 90% play, and it gets picked off and goes down. It's tough. And then you're down to 45 seconds left, one shot, block shot down. And then you're, you know, another 0 for 3, you know, when really you should probably just make the simple play and reset. So.
And just to jump in on that, like, from what the power play was last season to, again, it's the first game, lots changes really quick as guys get more comfortable with it. But the one area that was very close to last year was the power play breakout, in the sense of there wasn't a lot of speed. It's a lot of kind of trying to feel your way up the ice. Like, they got a couple guys on that unit that can really skate. One in DeBrusque, another when Garland was out there a couple times. You got to be able to bring the puck up with ice. Like, Tyson, you ran a lot of power plays, so I'll start with that. But, like, what is the difference, or what makes it the biggest difference of coming up as the, you know, as the D carrying the puck? You're going to make that drop, but you come with no pace to when you come with a lot of pace.
No. You want to,
not everybody has Connor McDavid though.
No, I was going to say my power plays, I was dropping it to MacKinnon, McDavid and Marner. So they were, I had the easiest gig in hockey. I always joked I probably hold the record for most, you know, drop pass apples. So, no, but it does. If you can get up especially as that, you get up the ice with pace and you kind of push that first line back and, but it's up to those guys on the back, that, you know, the guys who are accepting the drop, they need to be coming with pace to keep the line pushed back and make them make a decision at the line. Are they going to be able to stand or not? But like you said, not everybody's got the MacKinnon, McDavid speed. So yeah, it's sometimes you got to try to pick your way through.
But that is supposed to be Quinn, right?
Well, I think Quinn's usually doing the dropping, no?
Well, let's break it down. Shouldn't it be Quinn? I mean, who's better to carry the puck with
into the zone and set it up? Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's probably.
I mean, people aren't used to the defenseman doing it.
No, it's kind of like I used to drop to Roman Josi too, you know, for a very brief amount of time. So it could be something similar like that. You want your fastest, best skilled guy taking the drop, but I'm sure there's a couple guys on there that can do it. I know Petey likes to kind of pick his way through a little bit more, but maybe it's Besser. Maybe it's to get set up like Nate and Connor do 90% of the time. You don't have that guy on your team. That's okay. But you probably have someone who could get the job done.
Well, I mean, the nice thing with like Quinn's carrying the puck up and there is the drop guy. And just like a lot of the game for Quinn Hughes, it's making his best read, which is generally a pretty good read. And that's where it's great that you have that drop outlet. But if he sees the opening, he'll take it himself as well. The PK's got to think about both. It's just the getting a little bit stationary in the spots on the breakout. Like Evander Kane was glued to the wall in front of the penalty box. The one time where Quinn throws it out to him, he could have given a nice little chip back because Quinn's got speed, but he's already kind of made up his mind that it's going back to the drop guy. And again, that's a lot of first game because you know, okay, this is what we want to do. He'll start to figure out, Quinn got through that gap pretty quick. I could probably just give that right back to him. So they'll keep learning as they go, but I think it's definitely something, Brett McLean, who's doing a lot of the power play, will work on with those guys for sure before tomorrow.
All right, let's talk about the two hits, Uyghur and Pettersson. Were they the same? Were they different?
We kind of said we said it last night, but I think the Uyghur hit on PD was probably, PD's kind of notorious for that, the reverse hit. And it kind of looked like he was setting himself up to get the position and maybe do it. And, I think maybe that's what Uyghur was thinking. He's going to be into one of those PD's big back coming at him. So he hit him pretty hard and PD wasn't doing that. So it ended up being a bad result. I don't think it was like malicious. In my eyes, I don't think either of them were fives. The one on Zari was a little more defenseless, I think. So not great. You don't want to see anybody going headfirst into the boards. I think that's something we try to get out of our game. And there was obviously a lot of emotions with the home opener and it was intense. So that kind of stuff happens. But I didn't think either of them were, super violent, worthy of, the games and the fives. And I think they got it right. And
Landon.
And it's funny though, I didn't think of this, before we did the panel in the second intermission there, but I totally agree with the Pettersson and Uyghur one. I think Pettersson kind of got himself in there and put himself in a tough spot. Even he said after the game, he's like, it wasn't a dirty hit. It was just unfortunate. Like it is what it is. Stuff happens sometimes. But on the DPD hit on Zari, it makes a lot more sense to me now why he went in as aggressive as he did. And that goes back to last year. And it was early March. Pettersson absolutely stepped up and crushed Kadri with an open ice clean hit. And Zari came right behind him after, within a couple seconds and put an elbow into the back of Pettersson's head and knocked him out of the lineup for a little bit. And so last night, it makes a lot more sense now that he saw Zari he knows he's just going to tip that puck in to get the puck in deep. And he went through him. He tried to make it as clean as he could.
He took a number.
He definitely knew who he was hitting in that instance.
Players still take numbers, Tyson.
I just, sometimes they don't last through the summer, but yeah.
He's got a young memory. It sticks with you a bit longer.
He's the elephant.
So I got to ask you, the rules have changed in this league. There was a point for most of your career where a guy got called for a five and, it was gone for five, but the rules allow for review now, and the referees can look at it. Toronto can look at it, and it seems to have leveled the playing field a bit. What's from a player's perspective? What does that do?
I think it's nice because sometimes those, you know, you get a five, you lose an important piece. You know, you lose Uyghur for five there. I mean, not that it mattered at the end of the night anyway, but yeah, I think it's nice to get the call right, especially when it's going to be that impactful on the game. A 5-minute power play, you're probably going to get one. And if you don't, you've really got an issue. So, yeah, I think it's nice that, you know, you don't want to drag the game out and have these reviews going long, but I think it's nice on the important, something as important as a 5-minute penalty kill, especially when it's a good player. It's nice to be able to go and, you know, I say get it right, get it as close to right as you think you can, you know.
Landon?
I agree. I think it's great. And what it does is, you know, we all have our remotes and we can rewind and slow-mo and like all this stuff. The refs don't have that right away, right? Like they're watching it from a very close angle and everything happens quick. And sometimes, you know, earlier too, like they just instantly call a 2-minute because they're not sure if it would warrant a five. And the new way that they do it, well, it's just easy. Both those penalties were called five simply so that they could review it and make sure that they got it right. And now the refs kind of are able to cover themselves and make sure that the right play is made and not penalizing a team for 5 minutes when it should have just been a two and vice versa.
By the way, I don't know what it was like in the arena, but when you're watching the game and you see Pettersson go to the dressing room, you're going, oh my God, here we go again. Yeah. And I Adam Foote was pretty stoic, but you did see him glance.
I mean, no, you're going to want that guy healthy for the year. And I think everyone's rooting for him to have a bounce back year. And it sounds like he's put the work in and he's on the right path. So it would be, it wouldn't be great to see him go down with an injury, but came back and played great in the third.
The only nice thing out of that, because obviously now we know the result and he came back and had a nice assist on Besser's goal, but with Pettersson gone for those few minutes, it put the Canucks into a 3-man rotation with the centers, which means Braden Coutts got to get some reps with Besser and DeBrusque and kind of work around and get some more minutes that way. Like, the young kid played pretty good last night. He made a lot of really nice small area plays, especially in the D zone on breakouts. I find it really, really quite amazing that he's able to get a puck in the D zone and have a forechecker that's already right on him. And he's able to make that one quick move and make a 5-foot pass and just keep the puck moving. He held his composure pretty good last night.
What did you make, Tyson?
Of Coots?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, obviously he didn't get to play a ton. I think he was, I don't know what he ended up with, but he was
11-14. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably a little less than he's used to playing down in junior and doing his thing. But every time he touched the puck, every time he was on the ice, never once did I notice him in a negative way, which is, you know, it's hard to do. It's hard to do as a regular NHL player. So I think that shows probably a bit of maturity in his game beyond his years. I think, you know, we had a nice chat with his parents actually before the game. They're really nice people, but, you know, just getting their thoughts, his dad was saying, like, he's a pretty physical kid. He likes to get gritty. He likes to get engaged physically. And he was kind of concerned about, I wouldn't say concerned, but he was curious to see how he was going to do with all the big boys. And I thought he did great. He took who did he take a run at on the forecheck there the one time? And yeah, I think he fit right in. He skates well, and obviously he's understands the game well. He's in good position, so I think he's a kid that's, you know, you're going to work with him, and you're just going to see him get better and better.
I think if you took a situation and said, okay, he's going to play a little less than 12 minutes. He did get 240 on the power play, to your point, Landon, which is a pretty good number. And the one place where he would actually really struggle is the place he struggled, in the faceoff circle, right?
Yeah.
And that's 18-year-olds against men in the faceoff circle. Is you learn how to take a faceoff, don't you, Tyson?
Oh yeah, it's a whole game within the game. I mean, even all the centermen on your team, they're working. They'll stay out 20 minutes after practice and work on draws and tricks and getting their foot in. And that's kind of a welcome to the league kind of thing. You're going to have to put some hours in on the faceoff dot to compete.
You know, it's one of the things as a broadcaster you can always go to when you get new kids. I remember when Sidney came to the league. Yeah, Sidney's great. Yeah, but he's got to work on his faceoffs. Connor McDavid, he's great. Yeah, but he's got to work on his faceoffs. So
they're not ready. Yeah.
No. That, yeah. So Braden Cootes is in good company with going 3 for 12 in the in the faceoff circle. The other guy that I must admit. And Landon, a lot of this is based on our conversation with him this summer, was to watch Philip Hedl play last night and how much fun he appears to be having. And all the things he talked about with us, you know, working out, improving his shot, improving his skating, being stronger, particularly in the neck, it seemed to have paid off in one single game.
It really did. I think that his first goal especially – you call it a lucky unlucky because it ends up hitting ball up high and bounces right back to him. But it's the play before the initial shot that, like, he makes that big power move off the wall and just kind of shoves off that winger, gets himself to the middle of the ice. And again, like a lot of the Canucks from last year coming into this season, of being more decisive with the puck, not looking for that extra pass. Like, he gets himself to the middle, lets the shot go, and keeps following up to the net. And obviously it hits off Ball's head. And
I think it hit him in the ear.
Yeah, those ear ones are no fun.
No.
And, bounces right back, but he finishes it up. And then, Arshdeep Bains makes a beautiful pass to send Hedl on a breakaway. And he has a nice backhand forehand finish. Like, he had the start to a season that, not that he would say it, but he needed to have. Not for the Canucks, but for himself, to really get himself moving after a tough end of last season once again.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, management agreed publicly that, yes, we're looking for a number two center. Wouldn't Philip Hedl be sitting there at home in Czech, or when he got to Vancouver and said, well, hold on, guys, I'm your number two center.
Yeah. I've seen situations like that play out before. And it's not, when you want to be the top four defenseman and the teams are looking for a top four defenseman, they're out there looking for a right-handed top four defenseman. You're like,
power play specialist,
Yeah. So certainly that's not the way that, in your head you want to start it. But like, I think we've all seen it's the NHL. It's such a long season. And, that's a great start for him to say, hey guys, here's your number two center. So, things change and, if he has a good start, put together a good 5 games, 10 games, 15 games, then they'll go, oh, hey, we've got our number two center. We can add something else, So, it's just, and obviously when you're dealing with some injury stuff and, there's always those question marks. So, here's to hoping he stays healthy and keeps up, playing good hockey.
We're going to take a quick break. Landon, Tyson, and I'll be back after this. We're going to change the topic just a little bit and more about what Tyson and Landon are doing now and see if they've learned any lessons after working together for a couple of games on the Sportsnet broadcast. This is 100% Canucks. All right, boys, you guys are teammates. You and Dan Murphy, the three of you are the three amigos now, on at least on home games on Sportsnet. Tyson, what's the learning curve for a veteran player to get into the broadcast business?
Yeah, I'm a rookie rock pile analyst now. The lesson, I've learned a few. Those lights are bright. It's a little more, the first game, my first preseason, I was a little nervous. I didn't realize like how intense it was going to be. And, it's like kind of a 4-minute quick hit, but you got to be You got to be on. You can't swear. You got to be.
You can do all of that here on the podcast, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm more of a long format podcast guy, but it almost feels like you're putting on a show, like you're performing a little bit, which I wasn't super prepared for. So I'm learning. I think I got a little more comfortable last night. So there's tricks of the trade. I'm getting shoulders back, hands on the table, that sort of stuff. So I'm enjoying it, though. It's fun.
Landon, you're now the veteran guy on the panel. What are you teaching?
I think the biggest one last night was I will give myself a bit of props here.
What you got for yourself?
Tim, our sound guy, had just kind of finished telling Tyson a couple minutes before, hey, when Murph does his kind of solo hits and the open here, I just got to, if you're sitting in your seat, because Tyson's in the middle, you just got to move over a little so that your arm's not in Murph's shot. 2 minutes go by. Murph's just about to go on the open, and Tyson goes and swings the chair over. He's about to plop down. Luckily, I heard one of the guys, I had to grab him and move the chair back out of the way. Luckily, Murph's, you know, he's been doing this a while and real, real good at what he does. And he acted like nothing happened and made it go, but Tyson's just sitting there laughing his ass off, just like, oh, yeah, I was about close.
I was going to go show Murph something on my phone, so I was just barging right in there.
Well, you know,
I don't know how I got the middle chair too. I'm questioning. I'm on the swivel the whole time. These guys are locked in their corner pockets.
Well, so here's the key to that is because television is still two-dimensional, Tyson. You don't necessarily have to look all the way over to Dan or all the way over to Landon. You can actually look at about the 45, and so your head only moves half the distance.
I know I've been told that, and I think it's going to take me a time because that is not like a natural way to talk to a human. It's like not, you know, you're like staring off into the distance, like while this guy's yapping at you. It's going to be interesting if I can get that nailed sooner than later.
And Tyson, I got to say too, what was the one piece of advice they told you for the microphone? Because you actually did this really well last night.
Did I?
Better than I did. And I wouldn't even say just in my first couple games, but for the first three quarters.
Moving with it. Yeah. It feels kind of natural for me, so I can't take too many props on that.
Well, it's okay, so before we go, Canucks home again tomorrow night against the Edmonton Oilers. What's your expectation, Tyson?
It's going to be a great game. I think the Oilers are going to be not thrilled with their home opener. So
Oilers always get off to a slow start. You know that, Tyson.
I know how Connor and Leon take stuff like that. So they'll be, you know, the Canucks are going to have to be ready for, you know, the best duo in the league, bringing everything they got. You know what we haven't talked about? Nobody talked about. I know it wasn't a ton of shots on Demko last night, but when he made big saves. Yeah. He made a couple breakaway saves. That one where he squeezed it together at the end of the second. Those are, you know, kind of changes the game if he doesn't make those. So they're going to need him if he's going against the Oil, because they're not going to be putting up 13 shots through two, I don't think. So it's going to be a fast game, and it'll be a great test for the Canucks.
Landon?
Yeah, I think two very different feelings for both teams coming into it. I think Edmonton, just like Tyson said, are not going to be happy with how they let that one slip away from them against Calgary on opening night. And they're going to want to get their year rolling here. And for the Canucks, you know, not to keep going back to it, but after such a tough year last year, wanting to have a really good start. And they've had, you know, so many guys talked about like all the positive vibes in training camp and preseason. Well, they had more last night. You could see the guys having fun. You know, I think that they understand. I mean, they know the Oilers well, but they understand what attitude's going to be coming in, and they're going to have to be ready. But it's, I mean, those games are always fun to be in the rink, and there's always that extra bit of care by both sides when those two teams meet.
I'm interested, both of you, Landon, Edmonton, Vancouver's biggest rival, or who's Vancouver's biggest rival? And it's funny because I think Tyson would play, and would come with the Maple Leafs into Vancouver too. And there's always that Toronto-Vancouver hatred, but Edmonton-Vancouver, that sounds pretty vicious to me these days.
Yeah, I think especially since the playoff series in the second round 2 years ago, like that was a really tough fought series. And a lot of those guys are, you know, the good core pieces are both still there for both teams. I think it's a pretty good one. But it's also one of those for Vancouver that's trying to get themselves back on the right track and into contention. You know, Edmonton's a really good team, and it's always nice, especially early in the year, to measure yourself against a team that's just gone to two cup finals.
Agreed, Tyson?
I do agree. I think that I was actually at game seven, Canucks Oilers 2 years ago. I snuck in for that one, but that was a great series. And obviously the Oil have gone on and done some things in the playoffs and kind of separated themselves a little bit as a, you know, a team at this point. But like Landon said, this is a good measuring stick for them. Everyone's, you know, Oilers are a couple wins shy of hoisting it the last 2 years. So it's a great chance early to see where you're at.
Well, it will be fun to watch, and it'll be fun to have the three of us discussing a few things about the Canucks over the winter, if that's in fact what happens. Maybe Tyson, you can rejoin us in a couple of weeks, and we can have some more fun. And there will be no time restrictions on podcasts.
Yeah, well, I got to get on the helijet here.
Not all of us can afford the helijet. You know?
No, okay. I can't either. I got the Canucks on it, so it's all good.
All right, thank you, guys. Landon. Thank you, Landon. Thank you, Tyson. And thank you for listening and watching to this edition of 100% Canucks.